much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And we are going to have a guest on today, and that is going to be Dr. Christine Horner. So I will definitely let you know about Dr. Christine if you are not aware of her as yet. She is a nationally known surgeon, author, and professional speaker. And she holds two board certifications, the National Board of Surgery and the National Board of Plastic Surgery. Dr. Horner was recognized as a leader in her field shortly after starting her plastic and reconstructive surgery practice because she successfully ran a national campaign to pass laws requiring insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy. Her five-year crusade with the Breast Reconstruction Advocacy Project led to the passage of laws in 35 states and a federal law. The federal bill was signed into law by President Bill Clinton in 1998, and it was unprecedented because it was the first law Congress had ever passed requiring insurance companies to pay for specific surgical procedures. Dr. Horner is the award-winning author of Waking the Warrior Goddess, Dr. Christine Horner's program to protect against and fight breast cancer. And she is known as one of the country's leading authorities on breast cancer prevention. So thank you so much for joining us today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Dr. Horner.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Now, you, of course, were trained in conventional medicine, and so that was always your focus. So,
well, you know, yeah. Go ahead.
So how did you get from there, from having such an interest in things that might be considered traditional medicine? And what I mean by traditional medicine is natural medicine.
Sure. So, you know, interestingly, I think a rather large percentage of the people that I trained with in medical school and through residency actually developed an interest in natural medicine because shortly into a practice, you realize that Western medicine really falls short, and it does not prevent diseases. You know, it's something that is used primarily just to suppress symptoms, and I always say I learned nothing about health when I was in medical school or residency. I just learned how to suppress symptoms with pharmaceutical medications or cut things out surgically. But the big point came when my own mother developed breast cancer, and she had actually had an early stage breast cancer diagnosed about 5 years before, and we thought she was going to do fine. And then 5 years later, she developed a metastasis or spread of her tumor to one of the bones in her leg, and she just gave up, and she died about 9 months later. And that really rocked my world, because at that point, I was actually the spokesperson for the American Cancer Society on breast cancer issues, and I was taught to say that we don't know what causes breast cancer, we don't have any known cure, and the best thing that women can do are mammograms and breast exams, and that's what my mom did. And as I said, she developed that metastasis and ended up dying about 9 months later. And then I looked at my practice, and I was watching my patients get younger and younger and younger. And finally, I was doing breast reconstruction on women in their 20s. And I thought, something's terribly wrong with this picture. So I started looking through the medical literature just to see if I could find anything that would show that there was things that women could do to substantially lower the risk of breast cancer. And I instantly found thousands of studies that show exactly why we have a breast cancer epidemic, everything that we're doing to contribute to it, and the things that we traditionally don't do in this culture that are highly protective. And they are all natural. So food, supplements, herbs, activities, lifestyle choices, and so forth. Huge statistical data, and all the things that I was taught your medical school and residency that really didn't matter that much. And I thought, you know what? They were lying to me, because really it has huge statistical influence, which is the good news, because most of these cancers, breast, prostate, colon cancer, which are very similar tumors, they can all be prevented, and we have a huge say-so as far as our health.
That is the exciting news. And what you're saying is so true, because I am a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook Medical School, and in fact we're running a CEU course in October specifically on what you're talking about, which is evidence-based natural therapies. And you really don't have to dig so deep to find out. It's all there. Now, you're a very active person politically as well. So I would just like to ask your opinion in terms of the current health legislation that was just voted on last week.
Why don't you describe it a little bit more?
Well, okay, they call it Obamacare.
Oh, the Obamacare, okay. There's so much legislation going on all the time. I want to make sure about what you were talking about. Sure.
Well, in terms of its relation, because obviously you have worked very hard and you're a leader in actually having federal legislation intervening in actions by the insurance company. So I think that's very powerful that you were able to do that.
Yeah, you know, our system, it definitely was an education as I went through it, and I always say it was really some divine intervention that took place in order to have that law, which was tacked on to the budget bill. But, you know, federal legislation is so difficult, and it's not, unfortunately, something that's heard on its own merit. There's just so much that goes on under the surface about who owes who what and, you know, all these political things that are going on. So whatever we see on the surface is like kind of the tip of the iceberg about what's really going on. So it's really difficult, you know, in this country to pass legislation that makes a significant difference, because we politicize everything. But, you know, there's definitely extremely good points in the bill. You know, I think our health care, you know, I think most doctors that are practicing have become more and more disillusioned with it, because, you know, it's the most expensive system in the world, yet, you know, we're far from being the best system, you know, in the world. We're like 27th, you know, as far as longevity, and 37th according to the World Health Organization in quality of care. And, you know, we don't place any emphasis really on prevention, true prevention. We have false prevention, where we talk about these screenings that just pick up things after we already have them. And then I really think it's a moralistic issue, not an economic issue, about providing health care for everyone. You know, every country, every westernized country in the entire world supplies health care for their population, except for the United States. And we've got this, you know, horrible problem with the, you know, an extraordinary number of people that do not have insurance, and then the doctors in the hospitals are supposed to take care of them. And, you know, it's kind of like we have socialized medicine, but it's all falling on doctors and hospitals, and that's not fair. So we really do need to revamp, and given the fact that we're run by big businesses, this is, you know, the Obamacare is about as good as you can get.
Well, you know what? I don't know that that's true, because I want to tell you, I know it's 2,000 pages, but I actually have been reading a large part of that bill for the last year, because I must say it is posted to where anyone can read it. And as someone very interested in natural health care and true preventative care, which you definitely talk so much about on your website and in your books, it seems like there is information in that bill, once it gets instituted, saying that to keep your health care intact, you have to go along and take all the preventative measures that you can. And what they are talking about in terms of prevention is simply massive amounts of vaccinations, which will be mandatory to maintain your health care intact, and going along with things like mammography, which we're going to talk about. And I do want to share my own bias, okay? I'm a woman well into my sixth decade. I've been doing only natural medicine since 1964, and I have never had a mammography, and my kids who are close to 40 have never had vaccinations. So not to say I have a balanced view on this. I don't. But I am interested in your view on that.
Sure. Well, you know what? I haven't read 2,000 pages on that bill, so I don't think hardly anybody has.
No,
so
nobody has.
you know, nobody you're way has. More informed. I mean, I just know some of the superficial things. So I didn't know anything about that.
I know, but isn't that outrageous? Because I know that
what's important
to you is your discussion about how effective is mammography in terms of a risk-benefit ratio and in
right.
terms of saving people's lives.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the languaging of the bill is. What I do know is that, for instance, I live in California, and so they instituted here, which they said was designed after the federal legislation, that regardless of what your deductible is, you get your preventative, we'll put that in quotes, care for included and for free. So, for instance, if you have a huge deductible, you can get mammograms, colonoscopies, and so forth for, you know, basically completely covered by your insurance, and you don't even have to pay your copay, or you don't even have to pay, something out of your deductible. So that's, what they've done here. But, getting to the point of it, as you said, you don't get mammograms. I don't get mammograms either. And so, we have these tests in Western medicine where we say, okay, these are preventative, get mammograms, colonoscopies, PSA tests for prostate cancer, when in fact colonoscopies can be preventative because they're taking out polyps and those can be things that, grow before you get cancers that grow. But for sure, mammograms are not preventative because they only pick up something after you already have a problem. And, there's definitely some significant problems associated with mammograms. And one of them is that it produces radiation, which we know is a contributor to developing breast cancer. So why in the world would you have a test that would actually increase your risk of getting that disease? That's kind of crazy. But there's no question that it has saved lives, but it definitely is not an ideal test. And, I believe, like you do, that the focus really needs to be on true prevention, which is teaching people about simple things that they can do as far as their diet, lifestyle, supplements, and so forth that can dramatically reduce the risk of developing not only breast cancer but any disease, and also allow you to have an extraordinary state of health, which I think is the ultimate goal, rather than just preventing the disease, but really having a vibrant state of health. So that's where our focus really needs to be. And there's so many things that people can do that can dramatically lower their risk.
That's so true. But I'm very interested in maintaining personal choice in terms of, like you said, you uh-huh. choose not to get a mammography, and I choose not to get a mammography. But I'll tell you, I don't know in terms of your health insurance, but with mine, they do give me a hard time. And my doctor is required to tell me, you really should have a mammography, and we have to write in the chart that I refused it.
Uh-huh.
But some health insurance don't allow you to refuse it.
I definitely think, we definitely need personal choice. That's what this country is based on, too. So, absolutely. I mean, I think you should have complete personal choice about what you choose to do with your health care.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk a little bit about other screening tools, like something that I have had and which I've shared with my patients is both a thermography and a sonogram.
Uh-huh.
If you want to look for something, and then, God forbid, if you feel like, okay, there's something we may need to look deeper at, perhaps get a mammography at that point rather than one every year, which increases your exposure to radiation, like you said.
Right, yeah. So those tests, we're in a situation right now where we have no perfect screening tool. So mammograms, as we talked about, are things that produce radiation, which can be something that contributes to the cause of breast cancer, so that's very dangerous. Plus, they are overly sensitive, meaning that they're picking up too many things that aren't, suspicious. So like if you have a mammogram done, it'll say, okay, this looks suspicious, now you need to have a breast biopsy done. It's wrong 80% of the time. So there's like a million breast biopsies that are done in the United States every year, and 800,000 of them are unnecessary. So that's causing huge expense to the system, as well as, emotional trauma and so forth to the women that are involved. And then it also misses 20 to 30% of tumors because they have to to produce calcium in order for a mammogram to see them. So now we look at, you know, what other tests can we do? Well, MRI scans are kind of the secondary thing that we go to. Those are extremely expensive. They use a magnet. They don't use radiation, but they can cost up to $2,000 or so. So they're not a practical screening tool because of the expense. And like mammograms, they pick up a lot of things that are not suspicious or a problem, that, and we'll call them suspicious, but they do pretty much pick up most everything if you do have a problem, but again, the expense is a problem. So the next two things that you discussed were ultrasound and thermography. So ultrasounds traditionally are something that only show whether something's cystic or solid, and cysts tend to be benign and solid masses are of more concern, although they can be benign too. There's a relatively newer form of ultrasound, which unfortunately isn't widely available, that uses a particular color mode to it called elastography. And what that means is that it's checking the elasticity of the cell membrane, or the flexibility of the cell membrane. So the flexibility of it, and if it's cancer, it's very stiff and it will show up as red on the scale, and if it's flexible, it will show up as blue.
So, well, you know what? I love that, and that's one of the reasons I love to do radio. I never have heard of that before.
Okay.
Is it on
your
website?
Well, it's not widely available.
Wow.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I go to a place in Tijuana, and Dr. Rodriguez, who's at the Hoxie Clinic, but he actually trained in the United States. I think it was in maybe Philadelphia. UCLA's got one, but there's not very many of them, maybe because they're expensive. But when I went and spoke with Dr. Rodriguez, he said, you know, that he was able to see a 1 millimeter, which is tiny, tiny area of red. And he said, I think this woman has a 1 millimeter tumor, and he sent her to a surgeon. The surgeon said, you're crazy. There's no way you could possibly see that with an ultrasound. And in fact, that's what she had. So that's about... that's, you know, smaller than what you almost would see with a mammogram. So, you know, that's a really good test. It would be wonderful if that particular technology got more widespread and more widely available. Then thermography is an infrared picture of the breath. So it's simply a picture, just like normal camera, except for it's looking in the infrared spectrum. This was developed by the military because it looks at heat. So we were looking at heat patterns for the enemy at night. And as far as a medical use with it, what we found is that when a tumor starts to form, and even before it starts to form, the first thing that happens is new blood vessels start to grow into the area. But the blood vessels are not normal. They're abnormal. They grow in abnormal patterns, and they produce an abnormal amount of heat. So that's what we're seeing with a thermogram. We're looking at heat patterns, and we're looking at these blood vessel patterns. And so we can start to see what we call physiological changes. So these aren't structural changes really yet. We're seeing physiological changes in the breast that are warning signs that at some point in the future, your risk of developing a breast cancer is significantly higher than what it would be if you didn't have those physiological changes. So they're graded based on these changes, and grade 3, grade 4, for instance, are when they're kind of, okay, there's something going on and we need to do something as far as changing your diet and lifestyle, perhaps, to see if we can do some reversals. And then above that particular grade, then it's more suspicious and you want to do some further investigation or biopsy or so forth to see what's going on. But the exciting thing about thermography is that you can find these changes, you know, way before you get a tumor formation that occurs, and they're easily reversible. In fact, I worked with thermographers with a particular supplement that I created called Protective Breast Formula, and it's got 7 different nutritional supplements, turmeric, green tea, maitake mushrooms, grapeseed extract, vitamin D3, and a couple different things from cruciferous vegetables. And so what we did was to give these women that had grade 3, grade 4 changes on thermography, the Protective Breast Formula, and found that the thermographers reported that they'd never seen anything more powerful in reversing the changes, and we got complete reversals in 8 to 12 weeks. So that was really exciting to see that you could take these nutritional supplements and, of course, also, you know, be instructed about what are the best things that you should do and the best things you should avoid to create the best health. And in doing that, we know that we can really, that's a test that allows us to prevent breast cancer from occurring or at least help us in identifying those people that potentially could go on to develop that and nip it in the bud.
That is so true. And we'll talk about some of those other screening tests when we get back. We're going to take just a little break right here on Progressive Radio Network. I want to remind you that you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can visit us online at prn.fm. And right when you go there, you'll see an 800 number that people can call in to listen to a show if you're on the road. An app is being designed. There's all kinds of ways you can listen live to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Monday, like you are now, from 3 to 4 p.m., but also you can catch us on the web anytime. So we'll be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network. Welcome back once again, right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network, and you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can always find out more by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We have all kinds of on ground and in your face, you know, where we can actually see each other up close and personal, all kinds of activities tonight. We actually have a wonderful event at the Bethpage Restoration Farm, which is a beautiful CSA, that means Community Supported Agriculture facility in Old Bethpage, New York, and we'll be taking a walk and gathering edible and medicinal plants that you need to know about. You know what's going on all over the country with the heat wave and thousands of people with no electricity. What would you do if that were you today? Maybe it is you today if you're listening somewhere in the country. That's why you need to learn about survival. And part of survival is understanding the plants that grow right in your yard, not only understanding them, but learning to use them for food and medicine. We also have a walk coming up on August 16th, also on Long Island. So just go to naturalnurse.com and you can look at schedules for all our events. We will be in Chinatown on October 21st, learning all about Chinese medicine. And on October 6th, those of you who really want to upgrade your education and get CEUs at the same time can join us at our upcoming Evidence-Based Natural Medicine Conference, which is all day October 6th, and that will be at the University of Bridgeport in Bridgeport, Connecticut. For more information, visit our website at naturalnurse.com and just look at schedules and click the link, or send me an email or give us a call. And today we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Christine Horner, who is a medical doctor. She is the author of the award-winning Waking the Warrior Goddess, which is a beautiful book. The cover of it is excellent, and although she's focusing on breast health and wellness in that book, everything we're talking about today is for both men and women to avoid every kind of not only cancer, but almost every single negative health issue that you may be creating through incorrect choices. And I would like to invite you to call in today. Dr. Horner is here with us. She's actually on the phone with us in the studio. The number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888 if you would like to call in, and we'll have you on the air with your questions for Dr. Christine Horner. And Dr. Horner, thank you so much for joining us today as our guest.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Now, you were sharing with us information about the fact that once that you really support early diagnosis, and that doesn't mean using things that possibly can give you more of a problem that you have. So that was very, very good information that you shared with us about these other kinds of tests. And I know in terms of thermography, you can get a thermography, but usually it will not be covered by your health insurance. I know I just go ahead and pay out of my health savings account for my thermographies.
Yeah, that's correct. In most states, thermograms are not covered. There's a few exceptions. You know, here and there I've run into some places in Texas, you know, where the insurance was covering it. But for the most part, it's not covered. But, you know, again, I think it's just so important to really focus on what you can do. I mean, there's certain, when I was going through the medical literature and looking to see what can people do to dramatically lower their risk, one of the most astounding facts was that virtually everything that makes a difference, you know, I found that when they looked at studies and they were isolating that particular thing, it could be a food or a supplement or so forth, that you could have a terrible diet and lifestyle. You do one thing, you cut your risk in half. You do more than one thing, those things will multiply up together. They don't add up together, they multiply up together. So it becomes incredibly simple to dramatically lower your risk of developing particularly breast, prostate, and colon cancer, because they're so responsive to diet and lifestyle.
Wow, and that's really empowering information. So if people just make a little bit of an effort, you get some very big payback on that.
That's absolutely right. Now, you know, one thing that we, the statistics that are relatively horrifying are that if a person has a heart attack in the United States, 90% of them will go back to their original diet and lifestyle within 1 year. So it's like, okay, well, death is not a motivator in human beings. And so it becomes, you know, difficult when we realize that it's very hard for people to go outside of what the norm is in our culture and all these fast food restaurants and things, you know, that make it convenient and easy. Every single thing that's a part of a fast food meal is something that is disease promoting. So how do we get people to change over? And so oftentimes I say, you know, one easy thing that people can do is to take some nutritional supplements to begin with. And we know that even if you take one thing, again, you can cut your risk in half and then start making an effort at trying to change over your diet and lifestyle in addition to that. But at least you can get some protective effects by simply taking some dietary supplements.
Well, that is so true. And I know that on your website, which is really your name, so it's Dr., that's D-R, Christine Horner, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Horner, H-O-R-N-E-R, all one word, drchristinehorner.com. You have a lot of information about what people can do. So let's talk about some of these things in particular that you mentioned. Now, one thing, however, is let's go back to some of those other tests. We talked about women, and, of course, you're an expert in breast health. What about prostate and colon cancer prevention, and how about the screening test for those?
Sure. So the prevention will lump into our discussion with the breast cancer because it's all the same. Yeah.
Right.
So breast, prostate, and colon cancer are hormonally driven tumors, and as I said, they're very responsive to diet and lifestyle changes. And as you mentioned previously too, everything that will help to lower the risk of breast, prostate, and colon cancer are the exact same things that are the recipe for good health in general, and will lower your risk of virtually every single kind of chronic disorder. Now, the tests that are done for colon cancer, colonoscopy, which is invasive, you have to do it in the hospital, but that one in particular is something that can actually prevent cancers. They found that most cancers are things that start with colon polyps, and those are things that can be removed by colonoscopy and prevent colon cancer to begin with. And then the PSA is a blood test that's done for prostate cancer. And so it's not invasive and it doesn't cause any problems, but it itself is not perfect either, where you can get a rise in the PSA and it can rise for a whole bunch of other reasons than having prostate cancer. So again, it can lead to unnecessary tests and biopsies and so forth, just like the mammograms do for breast issues. And so there's all sorts of controversy about how often we should be doing these things, because again, they're not perfect tests and we have a real problem with the unbelievable expensive medical system that we have. And again, you know, the thing that I think we really need to focus on is educating people about what you should avoid and what you should favor. And by doing that, you're going to tip the odds in your favor so greatly and reducing your chances that's really the thing that we need to be focusing on the most.
Yes, that's so true. Now let's talk about, let's start with the avoid list and then let's go to the very exciting let's add in list.
Yeah, so the avoid list, unfortunately, it's pretty much the American diet. So we call it the standard American diet, or the SAD diet is the acronym, and very apropos, because when you look at the typical fast food meal, which is what most Americans are consuming on a daily basis, according to surveys, then every single component of it is something that we know contributes to poor health, and particularly breast, prostate, and colon cancer. So first of all, eating burgers, number one cause of breast, prostate, and colon cancer, or, you know, right up there at the top of the list, is eating red meat. And the burgers, we're going to call it red meat, but it's more like an industrialized product because of the horrible ways that we raise the animals and also the manufacturing of it. I mean, there was this whole thing about the pink slime and everything, but it's just like, I mean, it's got unbelievable amounts of carcinogens in it. You heat red meat, there's new carcinogens that are formed called heterocyclic amines that are extraordinarily carcinogenic to our entire digestive tract and increase the risk of all sorts of different kinds of cancers. The saturated animal fats are things that make our cells more insulin resistant. And when our cells are insulin resistant, it makes us more prone to getting type 2 diabetes, which has gone up like, you know, some astronomical amount in the last 10 years, like 90%. It's, you know, a near epidemic. And not only does insulin sensitivity to the cells increase our risk of diabetes, but they've now found that it's a contributor to most of the other chronic disorders that we see as well. So when our cells become insulin resistant, our pancreas will pump out more insulin in order to get the same physiological effect. And that's a real problem when it comes to cancers, because they find that insulin is something that acts like a growth factor for cancer. So there's little insulin receptors on the tumor cells, and when insulin hooks into it, it turns on cell division. So it really speeds up the growth of all sorts of different kinds of cancers, but again, in particular, breast, prostate, and colon cancers. Sugar, number one, you know, one of the number one horrible things that you need to avoid is sugar. Again, it's been found to be a common denominator with every single chronic disease. It promotes inflammation, and inflammation plays a key role in most chronic diseases, and in particular breast, prostate, and colon cancer. They found that if you take an anti-inflammatory, that you can cut your risk of breast, prostate, and colon cancer in half. That's one of the examples with it. But sugar is the preferred food for cancer. So the more you consume, the faster the tumors are going to grow. And, you know, we eat our weight in sugar every year, according to the statistics. And so all these sugary drinks and sodas and everything is, you know, something that is really contributed to terrible health of
now,
Americans.
What about, so people seem to be addicted to sugar, wouldn't you say, Dr. Horner?
Oh, sure. You know, we can get addicted to anything, but what's interesting is that when we consume a particular taste, you know, they find that our taste buds will become bigger because we're constantly stimulating them. When you cut anything like that out of your diet for just 3 weeks, there's actual anatomic changes that occur to your taste buds in your mouth. So if you cut out salt and sugar for like a week and then you try to eat it, 3 weeks and you try to eat it again, you won't be able to. It'll taste terrible to you because your taste buds actually change. So when people go, oh, they have such a hard time to it, it is really important to understand that it can become like an addiction, but you can break that addiction and relatively rapidly. So all it takes is about 3 weeks and you can really lose your taste for salts and sugars, for instance.
And what about perhaps substitutes that also have a sweet flavor? I mean, from there, a lot of people go to the artificial sweeteners like aspartame and NutraSweet and those kinds of things.
Right, and those are not good selections because there's a myriad of health problems associated with that. So there's a lot of natural sweeteners that are made from plants, and one of my favorite is stevia. So stevia is a South American plant. It's 300 times sweeter than sugar, but it doesn't have any of the physiological effects of sugar in the body. In fact, it will lower blood sugar and type 2 diabetics, and it will decrease blood pressure in people with hypertension. It's also got some antibacterial and antiviral effects to it, too. So that's a very good choice.
It's an easy thing to grow in most places in the country. Like I have it growing right in my yard.
Uh-huh.
So you can just grow it yourself just like you would a mint plant. And then, you know, just use it. It's such a simple,
wonderful solution. It is.
And you don't need a lot of sweetener. I think your suggestion is excellent. Like, just go on a sugar and sweet taste fast
for a few weeks. Right.
That is really an excellent, excellent suggestion.
Yeah.
And then, of course, all the fried food and processed food, you know, that's right in there with the SAD, Standard American Diet, that's sad as well.
Yeah, so all the, you know, like you said, processed foods, trans fats, the partially hydrogenated fats, these are things that, you know, really promote inflammation again, and really there's been no amount that's found to be safe for us, and they've been used to make potato chips crispier and cookies crispier and extend the shelf life, which they do, but they're very detrimental to our health. So the usual recommendation is stay on the perimeter of your grocery store, grow your own food, go to the, you know, health co-ops or so forth, and the more fresh fruits and vegetables that you can consume, the better it is. So we find that plants, because they're packed full of vitamins, minerals, and various different nutrients that are essential for health, but they also have hundreds of what we call plant chemicals or phytochemicals that don't have any nutritional value, they don't have any caloric value, but what they are, like natural medicines, and some of them behave exactly like chemotherapy without the dangerous side effects. And in fact, the drug companies base many of their drugs based on the mechanisms of actions that the plants have. So again, trying to eat as many fresh, we're not talking canned or anything, but fresh, whole fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and so forth, the healthier that you're going to be. And it's a really simple way to eat, too. It doesn't have to be, you know, complex. You can steam these things, and if you can boil water, that's all you need to do to get these fresh things in or to eat them raw. And that's a huge step in helping your health. In fact, there's an amazing study that was done that showed if patients that had developed lung cancer, if they were given just one cup of vegetable soup a day, that's like one cup, that's it, their chances of surviving were like four times higher. So this is the thing with my book, which is called Waking the Warrior Goddess. So the intent of it was to describe your internal healing intelligence. So you're waking it up, and your internal healing intelligence is like this warrior goddess, and they're trying to keep you healthy. And I'm like, boy, all she's asking is just give me a little tiny bit and I can really help you out. So again, you know, it's if you just give her a little bit of really nutritious fuel, then that's something that greatly enhances the internal healing intelligence in our body. And like I said, one of the things that you can do is to start with nutritional supplements to begin with. I talked about the Protective Breast Formula, which I designed.
Let's go into some of the individual nutrients in that formula, because there's so many things that are good in there.
That's exactly right. So there's two that are really outstanding, actually. When I talk about, you know, supplements, I like to give three. They're my all-time favorite. But within the Protective Breast Formula, turmeric and green tea. So turmeric is a cousin of ginger. It's the bright yellow-orange color in curry. There's been 4,000 studies that are done, published in the medical literature. In fact, a tremendous amount of research that's going on at MD Anderson, which is a very famous cancer hospital in Houston. But turmeric inhibits the growth of almost 17 different kinds of cancers that they've tested it on so far, and it has so many different mechanisms of action that it seems kind of miraculous, but it's considered the number one anti-cancer spice. So it has tremendous anti-inflammatory properties, antioxidant properties, but it also has all these different ways that it helps to slow tumor growth and inhibit the growth of various different tumors, and again, just, you know, dozens of different mechanisms by which it works. So it doesn't matter if it's, a lot of times people ask me, well, do you have to have certain hormonal statuses, you know, on your tumors when you're talking with breast cancer? It's like, no, because there's so many different ways that it works. And similarly, green tea has, you know, just tons and tons of actions in which it inhibits the growth of cancer. And I think the latest statistics on green tea was it inhibited the growth of about 11 different kinds of cancers, and dramatically so. So if you drink the therapeutic doses about 6 to 10 cups a day, but it can cut your risk of digestive cancers by up to 68%. Now, you start combining them, they find they have synergistic reactions, meaning that each one makes the other one more effective. So if you combine green tea and turmeric, they found that green tea will enhance the anti-cancer effects of turmeric by 3 times, and turmeric enhances the anti-cancer effects of green tea by 8 times. So you can get huge protective effects, again, by using healthy foods, healthy supplements, combining them, and invariably what the research shows is that we do get these synergistic effects. Now, the third supplement that I really am a big fan of is a mushroom formula. So mushrooms are things that we found that have a variety of different healthy properties to them, but one of the outstanding ones is that it stimulates our immune system. So our immune system is something that's responsible for keeping us healthy. It has all these different cells that will recognize foreign invaders or cancer cells and destroy them. And the theories of cancer predominantly are that something, from stress to toxins to poor diet and so forth, will knock out our immune system, like sugar knocks out the immune system, you know, dramatically. And then these invaders and cancer cells will have the opportunity to grow. So if we keep our immune system healthy, then that can prevent cancers from getting out of hand. And so the mushroom formula that I like is called AHCC. And it's a particular formula that's made from the roots or the mycelium of shiitake mushrooms. And the molecules that are active in it are these tiny little molecules. Normally, mushrooms are very big, so the tiny molecules are something that get absorbed into the system much more rapidly. And there's tremendous research, hundreds of studies that's used widely in Japan, recognizing that it will stimulate virtually every different kind of cell in the immune system, and great clinical data showing that it inhibits the growth of cancers. If you have cancer, it dramatically improves your survival statistics. And if you're undergoing cancer therapy using chemotherapy, they found that it can, in fact, reduce virtually every single side effect of the chemotherapy. So, you know, as a baseline, I tell folks it's great to take turmeric, green tea, AHCC. All those things are available on my website, and you can read about them some more on my website, drchristinehorner.com. But those are some basic ones to start with that can make a huge difference. And then,
really,
in addition,
now, why do you think that? I mean, you are so well versed in this, and your website just gives so much information about it. What is the resistance to this being immediately incorporated into mainstream medicine? I mean, if a physician says it hasn't been studied, at this point he or she just sounds ignorant. You're talking
That's right.
about hundreds of studies about each
thousands.
Of these things. Thousands.
Thousands.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. You know, I mean, the best that I can understand, because this has definitely been a question since I started discovering all of this and talking with other doctors that have an awareness about this research and teach about integrative medicine, so we're using the best of natural as well as Western medicines. Like, why isn't it widely adopted? And there's a lot of different you know, theories that we have about it. One is that, you know, we're run by big business, and we're run by insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies and so forth, and so it's not something where they're going to be making money off of it. And so the medical education is subsidized by these big companies, and so the education is targeted on pharmaceuticals and on surgery. And so there's this bias that occurs through the medical education where you think, oh, natural products don't work, and you don't learn anything about it. It's not included in the education, although now there's actually about two-thirds of the medical schools are teaching some classes on integrative medicine. But I think mostly it's the focus is on pharmaceutical treatments and so forth. And so people almost get brainwashed, you know, the doctors, about it's not effective treatment. You know, you have to focus on all these, you know, sophisticated technologies that we have and on drugs. And then the other thing that plays into it is that we live in such a litigious society, and, you know, 75% of the world's attorneys are in the United States. And so we've gotten a situation where every doctor gets sued. It's become, you know, a part of being a doctor is that you're going to have to deal with lawsuits. And so it's the way of practicing medicine is something where, unfortunately, doctors have become quite defensive in their approach, which has driven up the costs unbelievably. That's why we're doing all these unnecessary tests like crazy, because you're afraid of getting sued. And so there's this whole concept of the standard of care, you know, which is the pharmaceuticals and so forth, and then they feel like, oh, if they go outside of that, which unfortunately is, you know, your diet, it's like, come on, how could that not be standard of care? But still, there's some mentality around that where I think the doctors are scared, you know, if they do anything that's outside what the normal standard of their medical training is, then they feel like they're opening themselves up for potential lawsuits. And that's the best that I can, you know, understand.
Absurd, though. It's just absurd.
Of course it is. Yeah.
You know, when I'm at the medical school where I participate as a clinical instructor and I give lectures on this specific topic, it's amazing the closed-mindedness, and yet mm-hmm. people will talk about not getting results with patients, and here's a way to get results with patients that is very economical, has an excellent risk-benefit ratio, a very low adverse event profile, and it should be just immediately adopted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And again, it's one of those things where we're not getting to the root cause. We're just trying to cover up, you know, the symptoms. And then we create more problems with all the side effects of the drugs. So, you know, if we really spent our time focusing on health, which, I mean, sadly, I learned nothing about health when I was in medical school or residency. Nothing. I mean, it was something where I had to learn it on my own, and I got trained in Ayurveda, the traditional system of medicine from India, which is all about how do you create and maintain health. And so if we really focused on that and taught people about, you know, what they should be consuming, how they can prepare things very simply, it's like I've been a vegetarian since I was 14. I eat the freshest, you know, fruits and vegetables possible. I juice, I do all this stuff, but I'm a very simple cook, you know, so it literally you can cook these things in 5 to 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate, and we need to teach people that and also teach them about nutritional supplements and, you know, the exercise.
Well, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, it's true, but all doctors need to do that, you know, because, you know, just simple, you know, it's just amazing to me how the human body responds, where you give it one thing, you just give it a couple of things, it's like the response is tremendous. So,
and that's what's so wonderful in holistic medicine, to see people get well. It's just really the satisfying part. But I need to ask you one thing since you brought it up, and we're getting towards the end of our show, but now you made me curious about what led you to vegetarianism at such an early age of 14. Was that for health or compassion?
both. So I was the youngest, the fourth of four, and you get so influenced by siblings when you're a youngest child, I think. And so my oldest brother had become a vegetarian, and I thought, and I'd always been health conscious, and I knew that I wanted to be a doctor even when I was at 10 years old, so I was kind of an odd kid. But I read about it, and I thought, even back then, I thought, the health reasons, alone are something that make it important, but then also, understanding, how we raise these animals, and, for me, it's like, I wouldn't eat my cat or my dog, and it's like, why do we arbitrarily say, okay, this is the kind of animal that we can eat, and they all have consciousness, and to take their life unnecessarily is something that I don't agree with at all. So I did it for both, and I have to say there's so many people that are vegetarians that don't eat vegetables, so they're not healthy.
Yeah, just soy and bread or something.
Right? Yeah, so it's, eating potato chips and, whatever, cheese, you could say you're a vegetarian, I'm vegan, but still, it's like, so you really have to look at what is the most nutrient-dense foods that you can consume, and I constantly improve my diet with that now that there's been all these discoveries and accessibility to getting to what we call superfoods. You can take these superfoods like the pomegranate and ossei and goji berries and all these things, and I create a blenderized drink every morning where I get the blueberries and so forth, where it's like the most highly nutritious foods that I can find, and I put them all together in a blender, and it's like, hey, now I'm really packing, some stuff in. So I'm, I think there's
that's
a way
exactly
to.
It. I think people can tell from how you are, and if they see what we do on a daily basis, we find it exciting and satisfying. I don't think you and I go, oh, wow, we really wish we could eat hamburgers and french fries, but we're, depriving ourselves. I think
right.
It's an exciting adventure that you feel
sure.
Great.
Yeah, and you can have phenomenal energy, and it's like, I'm 55 now, and it's like I'm still running 5 miles a day and doing yoga and lifting weights and having great energy, and, the more I have upgraded in these superfoods and so forth, a cool thing to notice is, like, how your skin looks, because there is an amazing radiant glow that takes on when you're really getting lots of antioxidants and carotenoids and so forth into your system, and it's always such a wonderful affirmation that I get when people look at me and they go, oh my God, you glow, your skin looks amazing. And it's like, what? It's because I consume these wonderful plant foods and exercise and meditate and do all those kinds of things, but it really shows. So, not only does it make you feel great, prevent disease, but really enhances your beauty too.
All good things. And I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. People can find out more at Dr. But that's drchristinehorner.com. Beautiful website. I love your discussion on the dangers of electromagnetic fields, which we're not going to have time to discuss today, but that's one of the other very interesting articles on Dr. Horner's website. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I just, want to say how much I appreciate what you do, because if we didn't have people like you having wonderful shows like this, getting the information out, people wouldn't get it. So you're making a huge contribution, and I really commend you for that.
Well, thank you, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and you can find out more at naturalnurse.com or send us a like at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Go to iTunes and tell us how much you like the show or don't like it. We don't mind getting things that you'd like to hear or things that you don't like to hear. We don't mind having discussions with you about your point of view about natural medicine. In fact, we love it. So until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.